I'm Chuitha Gupta, and this is The Pulse. According to the research, we perceive about 80% of the world through sight, thus making our eyes vitally important. So the idea of blindness can evoke some pretty strong emotions. Most common amongst these, I would say, are fear and pity. Not far behind those are awe and surprise. For the able-bodied person, blindness can be anathema, something to be avoided and perhaps also to be cured. For those of us who are blind, there is more to the story. We lead rich interior lives and also have a lot of feelings about blindness itself. Sadness, perhaps grief, even anger are prevalent, but also feelings of joy and gratitude. Many blind people have a love-hate relationship with our vision. Today, we discuss the emotional landscape of blindness. It's time to put your finger on the pulse. Hello and welcome to The Pulse on AMI Audio. I'm Chuitha Gupta. For those of you who tune into the program regularly, I first want to start out by apologizing for my two-week unplanned absence. Believe me when I say it was unplanned. I had some great content in mind for International Women's Day and never got around to doing it. Perhaps later in the summer, there's always next year, but I just fell victim to the world's most horrific viral infection, to the point where I couldn't talk, which rather defeats the purpose of hosting any kind of a podcast or YouTube if you simply can't talk. So I am, as you can tell, much recovered, but there's also been, in the meantime, something of a change in the scenery. If you can see behind me, you'll notice that it looks very different from the usual studio setup. And if you are visually impaired, I'm happy to describe what you're looking at behind me, which is my home. I'm actually really excited to be doing the show from home. So off to my left is a tall cabinet with a lot of glassware. Right behind me, there's a shorter cabinet, also glass-fronted. And on top of that, you'll see my record player, which I bought as an anniversary present. God, I got ages ago, maybe in 2019. So I've had this for about 5 years now. And you can please make out some of the speakers and a lovely lamp I picked up with a white lampshade and quite a unique base because it looks like a tree branch or a tree trunk. And I love how tactile it is. As someone who's blind, just having that the feel of the wood under my fingers, and it is wood actually, is really fantastic. And off just on the other side to the right is my ever-growing record collection. It was starting to spill out of its cases. My husband and I are huge into buying records, buy them online, of course. There's a number of places we can shop for records, but also a number of secondhand shops in Toronto. It's something of a passion for both of us. At the risk of seeming like a bit of a snob, I do find that the quality on records and vinyl is much better, and it's something of a long-winded introduction, but I am of course eager to tell you what you can see behind you, but I am also equally joyous about doing the show from home. There's something really cool about it. In 2020, during the pandemic, I started to host the show when it was still an audio program from my apartment. And it's kind of nice to be back in the space and to have you join me in my space as well. So welcome to my home and welcome to The Pulse as well for those of us tuning in after a couple of weeks off. I have a really interesting and exciting guest lined up for our conversation today. As you know, we do a lot of memoirs on the program, often dealing with people's firsthand experience of vision loss and how they've made an adjustment to their blindness. But this is the first time that I have a guest on the show who is, in fact, a poet. And I went back and looked through my records to see if this was the case, that, you know, had I had a poet before and just clean forgotten about them some 700 episodes in. But it turns out that this is my very first poet on the show. Dominic Roberts is joining me all the way from Yorkshire in the UK and has just written a book of poetry dealing with his experience of blindness. Dominic, hello and welcome. Thank you so much for joining me all the way from the UK to talk about your book of poetry.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having me on the show.
So let's talk a little bit about the title of your book before we actually get into the contents. It's called Blinded by the Write, W-R-I-T-E. Okay, that's really clever. Poems from a Twisted Mind. You got to tell me, where does the term twisted come in, and when does that twist in your mind come in?
My friends would say that my humour is, shall we say, a little bit warped, a little bit twisted. And it's been said once or twice that I can go a little bit close to the knuckle, but that's why people kind of like my jokes, like my poetry, basically like my personality.
Mm. And so when did you start writing poetry? Is this something you picked up recently, or is this a lifelong habit?
Yeah, I picked it up maybe as a couple of years ago.
Mm.
When I was at school, I couldn't stand poetry. I didn't like Shakespeare or anything like that. But I, when I started going blind and I started noticing things, I kind of got into poetry a little bit. But then, like I say, a couple of years ago, that's when I thought, you know what, I'm going to give this a go. But it's going to be my kind of poetry. It's going to be fun. And that's where it sprung from, really.
Yes, it is really fun. It's catchy. You don't pull your punches. I like the poetry. The word that I would use is it's very punchy. What is your process for writing? Does it just come to you spontaneously and you crank it out somehow on your phone, or does a lot of thought go into it?
What it is it pops into my head. And if it pops into my head, then I've got to write it down, because otherwise I'd forget it. But a lot of the poetry that I write is basically, it could be like from real life. Or it's like my twisted mind. I've got like a fantasy mind, and it like I like to take people on a journey.
Well, we do love our fantasy. I am a huge Lord of the Rings fan, a huge fan of Harry Potter. Tell me a little bit about some of the fantasy in your poems, because the two that we'll go over today on the show both deal directly with your experience of blindness. But I am curious about the fantasy side of the book as well.
It's like I did one called The Yorkshire Tale, and it's got a real twist at the end. It's like we go on a shark dive, but people are not expecting what happens at the end. And also we go on a treasure hunt, but it's like on a big sunken galleon. And what they're not expecting is right at the end of it, they're going through and they think it's real. And then right at the end, I turn around and I actually tell them it's a dream. And the amount of comments that I've had on it, because it's like that's like my fantasy world, going down into finding deep dark treasure in an old galleon, and I wake up when the alarm clock goes off, and that's just my look on life.
Yeah, no, I like it. And you know, as someone who grew up on a healthy diet of Famous Fives and Five Find Outers, the Enid Blyton books, going on the treasure hunt is a lot of fun for me. In finding your way to poetry, did that feel like something of a treasure hunt to you? Because, you know, you talk about losing your vision, and for a lot of people that I've talked to, that's a very disquieting experience, because everything you knew about yourself has suddenly gone up in the air. How does writing poetry and coming to that place where you are comfortable expressing yourself in verse help you make peace with coming to you with your vision loss?
I think when I was first diagnosed, I was 21 years old, and I was diagnosed with the eye condition called retinitis pigmentosa. And basically what that is, it's tunnel vision. So as the years have gone by, the conditions got worse. So I've now got no peripheral vision, and the central vision in my right eye is pretty much gone. So I've just got limited edition in my left eye. But poetry kind of releases me from the real world. I can be in my own little world, and I can write what I want. And hopefully what people like. And maybe, yes, it can be gritty or, as you say, punchy, but it can also take people's minds to a happier place. And maybe they can share my world. And if they have a visual impairment, maybe they can adjust to my way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at one of the poems that you sent my way. And this one is called Eyes Tell Lies. Tell me a little bit about where that title comes from before we get into the reading of the poem.
It was the first poem I actually ever wrote regarding my vision. And it came from an inner space, and I wasn't really in a good place when I wrote it. And I thought to myself, do you know what? Blindness can be a curse. But there again, it can be a blessing. And that's pretty much what I wrote in the poem. And when you read it out, the viewers will see it actually goes physically from dark, a really dark place, to a happier place. And I hope they enjoy it.
I hope so too. And I'm going to try and do justice to your beautiful words, and hopefully you'll excuse any mangling on my part. The poem is called Eyes Tell Lies. Time passes so slowly, trapped in a world so dark. Life at the moment seems so very stark, undistinguishable between night and day. One day a cure, I hope, I pray. Sensitive touches, colors are clues. Hot are the reds, cold are the blues. Yellow is the warmth of the sun. Green is the grass on which I wish I could run. Senses heightened, both sound and smell. My brain, they're educating with a story to tell. My imagination is filled with adventures and fun. Maybe recovery has already begun. Not in the physical way, if pleased, not today. But in my mindset, it drifts far away. Internal visions, my thoughts roam free. This is my reality. This is me. The birds sing their chorus, chirpy, chirpy, cheep. Oh, how I wish my eyes could peep. The sea plays its music, its roar, its beat. Feeling the sand, such a treat on my feet. The salty ocean breeze stings my face. So lucky to be in my favorite place. So trapped in the sense of my physical being, with my eyes that unfortunately are now hardly seeing. But beat me, it won't. I'll ring that bell. To the tune of blindness, you can go to hell. Okay, I really like it. I loved how that ended. I hope you felt I did an okay job reading it. I suddenly felt like I was back in school, and you had to do the poetry reading in front of everybody in class.
you were brilliant. You did really well.
Thank you. So tell me a little bit about how long it actually took you to write that poem, because it's beautiful. It took me about a minute to read, but how long did it actually take before you?
It took me a couple of months because I kept having to go back to it and trying to like relive it, trying to live it in my own mind. And what the feelings would be like of actually touching the sand or getting the salty sea air stinging your face. And I researched it. I actually went out when I did all those things. So it took me a good couple of months to write it from start to finish.
Yes, I love the prominence of nature in your poems. Obviously, there's something to be said for how much more appealing it is to read about the sand and the sea and the sun than it is to read about, I don't know, cars and gasoline and sidewalks. But what is it about nature that helped you in your journey as a poet, but also in dealing with the changing reality of your vision loss?
I think nature's for everybody, not just for the sighted, it's also for the visually impaired. And as I say in the poem, the sun is like yellow, you know that's warm. Cold is blue. Red is hot. And I actually got some of that inspiration from a film called Mask, starring Cher. And there's a blind girl on the film itself, and that's how she tries to describe hot and cold to a sighted person. How, you know, it's brilliant. If anybody wants to watch that film called Mask. It's superb. And that's how nature does, like the sound of the sea, you know, it's the sea. You can tell the waves, the sun beating down on your face. It's warm. The rain kissing your cheeks. You know, that's the rain. The wind, it kind of speaks to you.
You said earlier in our conversation that you didn't like poetry, at least not in school. You know, keep away from the Shakespeare. Has that changed? I mean, now that you're writing poetry, are you reading a lot more poetry as well?
No, I like other people's poetry. I like other people's poetry when they've wrote it, but I'm not classical by any stretch of the imagination. I like it to come from maybe not reality all the time, but other people's fantasies.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But Shakespeare's a bit old school for me. I like new school.
Fair enough. It's not everyone's cup of tea, that's for sure.
No.
How do you go from writing a poem, perhaps as a way to deal with your own loss and your own changing identity? How do you go from that to writing a book of poetry?
Ooh, that's a hard one. Basically, I think when I came to terms with it, I wanted other people to come to terms with maybe their visual loss. And that was probably me, what I needed to do. It kind of helped me knowing that maybe I'd help somebody else. Because we all suffer, but a lot of people don't know how to deal with the suffering, and poetry really helped me. And if people can read my poems and it helps them, then that's a good thing. That means more to me than anything.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, I was so inspired, if I can say, or struck by the title of that poem, Eyes Tell Lies, because I remember as a young woman, as my vision changed, not being able to rely on my eyes anymore in the way that I used to be. Is part of it also encouraging a reader to move away from the visual as the best and only way to know the world? And are you inviting readers to think about the world in different ways, to feel the warmth of the sun on their skin, to they could feel the sand between your toes? Is there something to be said for the richness of life that comes about when you experience it with all five senses?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We don't need our eyes to see. And that's the title. We do not need. We've got other senses. We've got smell. We've got touch. We've got hearing. And we've actually got a voice. We don't need our eyes. Nobody needs their eyes. That's the way our world is. Nature provides everything we need. Like the thunder, that's like a soundtrack to life. And for people that can see or can barely see, the lightning, that could be the laser show. It's like nature's own disco. And that's the best way to describe it, really, I think.
Yeah. No, that's really like, I'll never look at a storm the same again. I'll think, oh, that's nature's disco.
Yep.
I am curious about your writing process, though, because I remember reading somewhere about John Milton, who was also a famous poet, wrote Paradise Lost, and the way he would write Paradise Lost is, you know, overnight he'd come up with the verses, and then in the morning people would take dictation. They used to call it the milking. What's your process? I mean, I was about to say, do you put pen to paper? Do you write on your laptop? Do you compose on your phone?
I actually do it on my phone, because it's easier rather than using pen and paper or a laptop, which I struggle with because I'm a bit of a technophobe. So it's a lot easier on my phone. And like what you've just said, I can go to bed with an idea and it'll just manifest through the night in a dream. It could even be a nightmare. But in the morning, I can remember it clearly and I get it jotted down quickly, and then I work around it. So I build on maybe a dream. It could be, I could be out somewhere and something will happen. I think, ooh, maybe I can make this into a poem. And invariably I do.
So where do you get your inspiration from? Everywhere and anywhere?
It's everywhere and anywhere. It could be a place. It could be a person. It could be an event. It's just that magical moment in time just inspires me.
Yeah. And what do you remember the moment where you sat down and said, you know, Dominic, this is the moment to write a book of poetry. You've been dabbling for some time now. Turn this into a book.
I'd written a few poems and I'd put them on one of my groups on Facebook, and people kept reading them and saying, do you know what? You've actually got a talent. And I'm thinking, yeah, you know, like you do, you put yourself down and you think, hang on a minute. There's quite a lot of people that are saying, these are brilliant. And then I got these other people saying, you need to write a book. And I'm thinking, me write a book? I've never even thought about writing a book. But then I actually plucked up the courage and I thought, do you know what? I'm going to give this a go. And I did. And I'm so glad I did.
Yeah, you and me both. How long did it take you to write the book, and how many poems are included?
I don't know how many poems are in it. I think there's about 80 poems, something like that, maybe more.
Wow.
And it took me about 12 months.
Oh, wow. That's quite a labor of love.
Yeah.
Were there poems that you wrote that didn't make the final cut?
Yeah, they were supposed to be going in a second book, but these ones are a little bit more to the bone, shall we say. They're a little bit raunchy, and I don't think they fit in the book, because I've got a couple of gritty poems in the book that needed to be in the book. There is some that are, say, on the editor's floor, shall we say.
And what sort of reception has the book gotten from readers and people who picked it up?
Absolutely brilliant. From off Facebook, from my friends and my family, absolutely amazing. Amazon, all my reviews are all 5-star.
Oh, wonderful. And this, and the book so far is just a hard copy, but are you planning to create an audiobook at some point?
I'm hoping to, yeah. The idea was, the reason why I created a paperback version was I actually wanted something physical in my hand and to be able to give to family, because there's quite a few people that have asked for signed copies. And obviously it's a physical thing that you can actually give somebody as a gift, and I've gifted quite a few. But eventually I'm hoping to do an ebook or an audio book. And somebody even mentioned about a Braille one, but I'd have to look deeper into that. The actual text of the book I've made larger so people with visual impairments can actually read the text.
Mm-hmm. I mean, someone who has low vision definitely can access it. And, you know, if you are fully blind, but you like poetry and you're motivated enough, you can probably scan the book and get an electronic copy that way and have a read. Tell me a little bit about this next poem. It's called Blind is Beautiful. Why didn't you set that one up for us?
Because I just think blind is beautiful. I do. When I was fully sighted, I probably took a lot of things for granted. And that could have been my life, because I used to like to ride motorcycles. I was a chef. And, you know, I didn't really have a care in the world. And then the vision started disappearing. I started noticing it when I was in my early teens. And basically, it was a little bit of night blindness. And I didn't think anything of it. And then I got older and the vision got worse. I started bumping into things or bumping into people. And obviously in light, different kinds of light, I couldn't see. So it was horrendous. It was absolutely horrendous. And then I was going back it was like somebody in the poem, it says, like, it was like somebody turning on and off a dimmer switch. So if you can imagine that, I literally went from light to dark to light to dark. And it was just that way. And I thought my whole life had ended when I got the diagnosis at 21, because I knew something was wrong. I was diagnosed by accident, because I went to the hospital to try and have laser treatment on my eyes so I wouldn't have to wear glasses anymore. Well, they actually picked up on it doing a peripheral vision test. And that's when I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa. And that's when my life really changed.
Change, yeah, life-changing for sure. Let's read A Blind is Beautiful, and then maybe we can talk a little bit more about the poem.
Yep.
Blind is beautiful. As the light began to fade, like someone had used a dimmer switch, the reality of blindness set in. Colors once vibrant blended into the inky darkness and became shadows. People's faces became shrouded in a permanent dusk. And the sun lost its glow and withered away into an empty sky. The love I once saw vanished into obscurity. My independence so cruelly taken away. My life had ended. My blindness had won. Or so I thought. My senses began to heighten. The flowers gave off the scent of a beautiful meadow. The birds sang with the voices of angels. Although I couldn't see the sun, the rays kissed my face like a lover's lips. A breeze gently blew away my tears of despair. The love I thought I lost was in fact stronger than ever before. My heart and my soul once again danced. As one, my eyes, my vision were just playing tricks. When I could see, they were just a perception of what I thought was reality. My independence regained through touch and sound. I have peace in my life. My mind again, a happy place to ponder. I was back. I was alive. I was free. Blindness, you didn't beat me. Bravo. I mean, bravo to you for writing such beautiful and passionate words. Do you think, though, that blindness is something that necessarily needs to be beaten or overcome? Or is it something that you tend to make peace with and live with? Like, you know, there are two sort of competing ideas about vision here. So which one is it really?
I think you learn to live with it. You accept it. You can never beat it. Once you've got it, it's not going to get any better. So you learn to live with it and use it to your benefit. Because if you don't, you're just going to live in a world of misery. That's, you know, I did all my grieving when I was diagnosed. And I thought, you know what? Like I said, blindness, you didn't beat me. And it hasn't. It's enriched my life.
That's a beautiful place to leave it. Dominic, once again, just remind us where we can pick up a copy of your book.
You can, if you go onto Amazon and if you type in Blinded by the Right, that's WRITE by Dominic Roberts or Dom Roberts, that's exactly where you'll find it on your version of Amazon.
All right. Dominic Roberts, thank you very much for joining us and chatting about your poems and for giving us an opportunity to read so many of them and to discuss your journey. And I look forward to having further conversations with you if you write more poetry. It sounds like a second volume is in the works.
Thank you very much for inviting me on and giving me your time. And I hope everybody buys the book and absolutely loves it as much as I loved writing it.
That was Dominic Roberts, who joined us all the way from Yorkshire in the UK, talking about his book of poetry that you can pick up off of Amazon. We'll make sure to include the link in the description below so that you're able to pick up a copy of the book if you like. I always think that books of poetry make beautiful gifts as well. So if you are in a gift-giving mood or you have a poetry lover in the family, this might be a really interesting and thought-provoking book to give someone as a gift. Well, folks, I got to run. It's sad whether I'm in the studio or I'm at home. Time always flies away from us. So I've got to run, but it was a pleasure being with you today. And this is the first show out of our new home studio, if you will. And if you have any feedback, feel free to leave it down below in the comment section. Don't forget to subscribe. If you're listening to the podcast, do subscribe. And of course, same for YouTube. If you want to be notified about future episodes, make sure you get that subscription. You make sure you sign up for the subscription. And if you have any comments that you want to reach out to us in other ways, you can do so. You can write us an email at feedback@ami.ca. You can also give us a call at 1-866-509-4545. That's 1-866-509-4545. And don't forget to leave permission to play the audio on the program. If you are on X, formerly Twitter, you can find us at AMI Audio and use the hashtag PulseAMI to reach out to us over Twitter as well. Always look forward to hearing your comments. If you write me on YouTube or if I see something on social media, I do make a point of responding. So I hope you will reach out with your feedback, your comments, and your thoughts. And again, thanks very much for listening. This is it for the Pulse for this particular episode, but we'll be back next week with more content. The technical producer for the show is Mark Aflalo. Andy Frank is the manager for AMI Audio. Randall Henty is the coordinator for podcasts at AMI Audio. So a big thank you to all of them. And I've been your host, Juwita Gupta. Thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your day.